Oh, it doesn't even say what kind of wound?
No, no.
Good old fashioned.
This is not where he dies. He dies. He dies a way better death than that.
He probably just fucking stepped on a Lego.
Dude, no spoilers.
So you're saying you pretty much got like prison shank? Like somebody just came up and like, yeah, and just like walked away.
Yeah, you're doing too good at the Battle of Acre. Take this. Yeah.
Time to learn. Time to laugh. It's the death address.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Death Address. Today we have me, Dakota.
And me, Ethan.
And I, Andrew.
And just some random guest that came from some other dumb podcast, Josh.
Today, Jordan and Ray aren't going to be joining us, so we decided to get a special guest that was willing to come on in short notice, Josh from the Mindless Morning Show. If you guys haven't heard of his podcast, you should definitely check it out. It's a real fun listen and a good time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Booyah.
So, yeah, I guess, cool. We'll just kind of go ahead and jump into the episode, I guess, like we normally do. Today is going to be a little bit different. I did the research, and every single time I picked a person, there wasn't as much there as I wanted there to be. So I decided to make it a kind of mix. So we're going to go through a variety of different people and things that happened, and hopefully you guys will have a laugh with us.
Sounds like top-notch research.
I mean, yours was bad. Okay, how about that?
No, Ethan's was good.
Ethan,
but I know.
I had the pause because I didn't really know what to say.
Sir, are you qualified for this research?
I was hired on the spot because of my interview.
Cool.
It's like your show.
So we're gonna jump in and start with Henry II, Count of Champagne, or Henry I of Jerusalem. He, as his name suggested, is the Count of Champagne from 1181 to 1197, and the King of Jerusalem from 1192 to 1197 by virtue of his marriage to Queen Isabella I of Jerusalem.
How many New Year's parties do you host before you're declared the King of Champagne?
Dude, I mean, I don't know if it looks like champagne. It's spelled like champagne, but is it champagne?
Champagne? What?
Champagne? I don't know. It's French, maybe.
The champion's right? Cologne.
Could be
champagne.
Champagne. So he was the eldest son of Count Henry I of Champagne and Marie, daughter of King Louis VII of France. And Duchess Eleanor of, Aquitaine.
Naturally.
I didn't look to pronounce on these ones, so my bad.
Aquitaine
everybody.
Hunger Force.
Yeah, number one in the hood. Yeah, copyrights. We did bad. Oh my god, you pissed Onyx off, dude.
That's what happens with copyright laws.
In 1171, Henry was betrothed to Isabella of Hainault, and like last minute they were like, nah, fuck that, and they decided that Isabella of Hainault was gonna instead marry Philip II of France.
Are you saying Hainault? Like, is that a fancy way of saying anal?
It's like
sounded bad. Yeah,
it's pretty close. It could be a silent H, so maybe.
Oh, there's an A. Okay, I didn't hear that.
Did you say a silent
the queen of anal trying to butt chug the king of champagne?
That's what it sounds like. So like I said, she ended up marrying Philip II of France instead of Henry II of Champagne. And naturally, his father, aunt, and other members of his family were pretty pissed off and ended up causing a lot of tension in the French court. Henry's father ended up dying in 1181, and his mother ruled as the regent until 1187. It was then 3 years later, in 1190, that Henry left for the East after having his barons swear to recognize his younger brother, Theobald, as his successor should he fail to return.
See, I'd much rather have been Theobald. Everybody else is named Henry and Philip, like the 18th. It's like, right, Theobald sounds like badass compared to those.
It really does.
Also, he probably pronounces it Theobald.
Theobald.
Yeah, probably. He probably made it sound way cooler than Theobald. Henry ended up joining the Third Crusade, arriving ahead of both his uncles, King Philip II of France and Richard I of England. So yeah, not only did
he was the first dick,
Philip II of France, that's like, that's his uncle. So it's like, dope, I'm going to get Isabella of Hainault with an H. and she's like, nah, I'm going to marry your uncle instead. So yeah. But anyways, he was one of the leaders of the French contingent at the Siege of Acre before Philip II's arrival. And he is said to have been a member of the group involved in the abduction of Queen Isabella I of Jerusalem. There's apparently a lot of people named Isabella as well as Henry, you know.
So that's why Theobald was a good name.
So, and the reason for her capture was to get her to consent to a divorce from Humphrey IV of Touron so that she could be married to Conrad of Montferrat.
Wow.
So there was a bunch of crazy stuff going on.
I feel like just like anywhere amongst like all the countries that were around then, it would kind of be like, you know, like Star-Lord, where he's just like, I'm Star-Lord, man. And he's just like, who?
I'm Henry II of Champagne, man.
Who?
What? Henry was also related to Conrad through both his maternal grandparents, which, you know, they're probably dead by now, but yeah.
So everybody wanted to marry like all his aunts and uncles and cousins, but nobody wanted to marry him.
He was kind of just left in the
story of my life.
So this next name is a hard one. So according to Baha ad-Din Ibn Shaddad, I think I got that right.
That definitely sounds right.
He was wounded at Acre on November 15th. Yeah, it doesn't say how he was wounded. It was probably just like a knife to the gut or something.
Oh, it doesn't even say what kind of wound?
No, no.
Good old fashioned.
This is not where he dies. He dies a way better death than that.
He probably stepped on a Lego.
Dude, no spoilers.
So you're saying he pretty much got like prison shank, like somebody just came up and were like, yeah, and just like walked away.
Yeah. You're doing too good at the Battle of Acre. Take this. Yeah. Later on in his campaign, Henry shifted his allegiance to Richard, who in April 1192 sent Henry and his representatives from Acre to Tyre, I don't know, to inform Conrad of Montferrat of his election as king of Jerusalem, because he was now the one to marry Isabella of Jerusalem.
Is that spelled ferret like a ferret, or is it F-A-R-A-T?
It's F-E-R-R-A-T.
Ferrat?
That's why I said Montferrat.
Montferrat? Interesting.
So then Henry returned to Acre when a few days later, Conrad was murdered by two assassins. So after he returned to Acre, they killed him without him knowing. So he's like, all right, cool. Now I'm going to go back to Tyre or Tyre 2 days later to help organize Conrad's coronation. And he ends up finding out that they're planning a funeral instead. So he's like, oh, cool. What happened here? And they're like, I don't know, dude. He's dead.
He's dead.
And he was now immediately betrothed to the newly widowed and pregnant Queen of Jerusalem, and they were married just 8 days after Conrad's death.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really moving along quickly.
Yeah, right.
Here's your pregnant wife. She already comes ready with a baby.
This is like the like organic montage. This is where montage came from. It was like 8 days of a montage, and he's like, look, I'm married with pregnant lady now.
You're going to need a montage.
Wow, that's crazy.
The marriage was glossed romantically by some of the chroniclers that Isabella was so taken with Henry's physical attractions, because he was 20 years younger than Conrad, that she apparently asked him to marry her instead of him asking her.
So, you're so much better than my old saggy husband.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it sounds like. Since she was already known to be pregnant with Conrad's child, Maria of Montferrat, the marriage was considered scandalous by some, but it was politically vital for her to acquire another husband to defend the kingdom. So, oh yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's probably why it had something to do with his physique. And she was like, oh, he's powerful. Look at him. And I get that on top of me instead of that.
It was like one of those bod commercials from earlier this millennium.
The first bod commercial back in 1192.
Those were great.
That's why they've been around for so long, you know?
Yeah.
You don't fix what isn't broken. Bod.
The Axe ones were honestly even better. Like the old school ones, like the little kid just like walking down the store. sprays it, and like all the girls that are inside the store like come running towards
him. Oh, yeah. Start chasing him around. Yeah, I remember those ones.
Oh, Dad, can we go get Axe? It's going to help. What?
I really need this.
I need chicks.
So jumping back to the actual story here.
Sorry.
The couple, Henry and Isabella, ended up to go on to have two daughters, Alice and Philippa. Philippa? Philippa. It's got two P's. Three P's.
P, you know, they didn't want to name her Philip, so
it's Philippa. 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 Philippa.
I think it's just Philippa. I'm sorry. Or Philippa.
I think you nailed it every time.
Yeah. The more I say it, the better I get, right?
So this is now where we get to the good stuff, all right? If that wasn't already the good stuff, but here it is. So Henry ended up dying in 1197, all right, from falling off of a first floor window at his palace in Acre. And there are varying...
I thought you said this was cool.
Don't worry. There are varying accounts in different manuscripts of the old French continuation of William of Tyre, also known as the Chronicle of Ernuel. Or Ernol. There's a lot of anal in this episode. Apparently. Yeah, Ernol. Somebody was already going to say it. I had to say it first. It's my show! So the majority suggests that a window lattice or balcony gave way as he leaned against it, and a dwarf servant of his named Scarlet also fell after panicking and trying to save him by catching hold of his hanging sleeve, where... Obviously, he weighed too little to pull the king since he was tall and strongly built. And another version suggests...
Can little people not be strong?
Well, it was a dwarf servant, so I wouldn't imagine that the dwarf servant would be strong enough to hold this tall, strong, built king back then.
For some reason in my head, I'm picturing like the Rock falling out of a window and Kevin Hart trying to grab him.
So... Another version of it suggests that Henry had been watching a parade from the window when a party of, Paizan
sounds the best.
Of Paizan envoys entered the room, and he turned to greet them, so he stepped backward and apparently lost his balance falling over the balcony. And the dwarf did the same thing. But whatever the exact circumstances, Henry was killed outright. And the servant who suffered a fractured femur raised the alarm, but later died of his injury. So the main thing here, though, was a lot of people suggest that Henry might have actually survived if his servant had not fallen and landed on top of him.
You broke my fucking
crushed it. Wow. Now, you said this was a one-story window?
For this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a quick little story for this guy.
No.
The first story of the building. Yeah. It was apparently the first story of his balcony or his building.
He didn't land on anything. He just died.
He landed on the ground and was like, "Oh, I guess I'm okay." And then his dwarf fell on him.
Now, do you mean like, because you're meaning like not the ground floor, right? So technically, like the second story of the building.
I guess a floor up. You know.
Then that means like if he was on the first like floor, then he only fell like 5 or 6 feet maximum.
It can kill you. That's why OSHA makes you tie off anything over 6 feet.
I just pictured him like literally falling out and like standing up and brushing himself and being like, "Wow, I'm okay." And then you hear like,
because I feel like the first story window is almost just like tripping and falling without even going out anything. Like, it's not a large fall.
Just picturing it makes me just crack up.
All those muscles did nothing.
I feel like he just like tripped and then the little like guy came over and like body slammed him or something.
This was a murder. We all saw it. So that's the good old story of King Henry II of Champagne, or Henry I of Jerusalem. There's some aftermath of kind of like what he left and stuff, but it's not really that important for the episode that we're doing right now, so we'll leave it out.
Perfect.
And,
Just that's all you need to cap it off with. And he died because a little person fell on him.
Because yeah, I mean, and it's like one of the things said it like ran around in a panic and like tripped and fell off too, and then the other one was like, no, it actually tried to save him. I'm like, that's probably more likely than it just like running around being like falling off. Like
it would be funny if it happened that way though.
All right, so yeah, we'll move along into the second one.
Move along. Right.
I guess, is there anything anybody wants to say about King Henry II of Champagne before we move on?
You know, don't have servants that'll fall on you.
Yeah, that should be like in your interview process when he was hiring him.
How many people have you fallen on before?
No, let me ask you something here real quick.
Just be able-bodied enough. But,
you know.
What'd you say, Josh?
To just be able-bodied enough to like actually save them, if anything.
Yeah, for real. You should probably be the size of me in case I happen to fall. What do you think?
No, I'm pretty strong, you know.
Would you say that's the moral of this story, Dakota, as the researcher? Is that the moral you
As the researcher here, the moral of this is make smarter decisions in your interview process and get somebody that is strong enough to hold your weight if you were to fall off of a cliff or first story balcony, apparently.
That, I mean, imagine him trying to take an arrow for him and he just like dives in front, but he's like only covering his hands. And
for the sake of our death shifter, our death address here of our picturing the reimagination of this, when he fell, landed and stood up and started like brushing his shoulders off the dirt, was he probably had a smile on his face because he felt pretty good that he had just survived that fall. So he died with a smile on his face, presumably.
Instead of a piano crushing him, it was just his servant coming down after him.
This one's busted.
This one's a myth busted. All right. Okay, so for realsies, moving on to the next one. This is a fun one. It's going to be a kind of a quick one, but it's an interesting one, and apparently not the only time this happened, but it was the Dancing Plague of 1518. Yeah, let that soak in for a couple seconds while I drink some water real quick.
I just feel like I can already picture like somebody like with Joker plotting and just like making these people dance to death. Like,
dude, based off of like this story, by all means, it probably could have been. So, in July 1518, residents of the city of Strasbourg, then part of the Holy Roman Empire, were struck by a sudden and seemingly uncontrollable urge to dance.
Disco fever.
He was Star-Lord.
The hysteria kicked off when a woman, possibly, there's not like 100%, known as Frau Trophia, stepped into the street and began to silently twist, twirl, and shake. So there was like literally like picturing somebody dancing to music and then turning off the music and they just like keep going.
It's like a silent disco, like a silent rave with like the headphones but no headphones.
So she kept up her solo dance-a-thon for nearly a week, and before long, some three dozen other Strasbourgios had joined in.
Is that bourgeoisie?
Dude, maybe. I don't know how to spell that.
Type it in the chat.
Strasbourgeois.
I think that's pronounced bourgeois or something.
Bourgeois.
So yeah, they joined in. And by August, the dancing epidemic had claimed as many as 400 victims, which is pretty fucking crazy.
Well, good thing it didn't turn into a pandemic.
But don't worry, guys. This shit gets fucking crazy. And again, picturing it is fucking hilarious. So with no other explanation for the phenomenon, local physicians blamed it on hot blood and suggested the afflicted simply gyrate the fever away.
Hot blooded, take it from me.
So does this say you already have a fever, so just dance it away with some active
thing. Got a fever of 103.
This borderline sounds like a Florida Man story.
Yeah, dude. I think it said Florida Man was there. Just kidding, he wasn't. All right, so this is where I started like cracking up.
They then decided that it was best to... Okay, ready? A stage was constructed and professional dancers were brought in. The town even hired a band to provide backing music.
Bro, this ain't real. This can't be real.
Like, why?
15, 18, like, just picturing it back then.
They're going to dance. We need to teach them how to dance well.
It's like they're dancing their life away. Let's at least make it comfortable for them.
Put the mods over there. Let's get the drinks served over here.
Yeah, like, set up the condiments over there. What do we need condiments for? You'll see.
The hors d'oeuvres, or as I prefer it to be called, the hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvres. All right. So it wasn't long before this marathon started to take its toll, and they were probably like, wow, maybe we shouldn't have, like, made
encouraged
it
them. Yeah,
like, why do we encourage this?
We shouldn't have egged this much.
Many of the dancers started to collapse from sheer exhaustion because, I mean, the professional dancers they brought in, apparently they didn't take care of, like, I guess. They're like, go in there and dance your life away.
I just picture the Always Sunny where they're dancing for the bar.
Yeah, dude, that's basically what this was. That's basically what this was, but there was no tapping out, apparently. Like, once you were in, you were in for good.
Like, the only way out is a body bag.
Was it just an extreme case of the nervous trotties?
That's what it kind of sounds like, huh?
The nervous trotties always come back.
I'm kind of disappointed that this disease or whatever it was, this fever, was cured and taken care of, because I think it would have made the world a better place.
I don't necessarily think it was cured, more as like, well, they'll figure it out on their own, or they'll just kind of go away on their own.
Wait, so yeah. EDM kids today just have this?
I guess. So on top of the sheer exhaustion, some died from stroke and heart attack as well, so it's kind of unfortunate. But the strange episode didn't end until September, when the dancers were whisked away to a mountaintop shrine to pray for absolution. We tried to have you guys dance the festival away and do all this, but it's just been too long. So how about you take it up to the mountaintop?
Pray for death.
All right, so the Strasbourg dancing plague might sound like the stuff of legend, but it's well documented in the 16th century historical records, and it's also not the only known incident of its kind.
Ooh.
Similar manias took place in Switzerland, Germany, and Holland, though few were as large or deadly as the one triggered in 1518.
Wow. I feel like this had to have been triggered by some sort of, like, deity just messing with people, or like
some fucking plague doctor testing out some sort of, like, laughing gas or dancing gas.
Wait, so Ethan, your theory is a deity. Dakota, you think it was the plague doctor, like the Joker?
Like the doctors that would wear those, like,
the plague mask.
Yeah, I know what they are.
Yeah.
It was like an evil villain, Joker. Basically.
Yeah, basically. Like, somebody just trying to, like, dude, a crazy doctor that's trying to, like, I'm trying to test out my theories for the good of the earth. But it was, like, really evil.
They found a dancing virus back then.
Yeah, so what could have led people to dance themselves to death? According to historian John Waller, the explanation most likely concerns Saint Vitus, a Catholic saint who 16th century Europeans believed had the power to curse people with a dancing plague.
Wow.
Like, hey, dude, what's your power?
Like the devil in disguise, pretty much, or something.
What power can you do?
See, I thought he would have been the one that gave, like, gingivitis or something like that.
Yeah.
I got money on, like, the government, like, making it, and like, oh wait, this ain't gonna work. They're just dancing, guys. We need just something.
They're harmless. Way too long.
This is like the spawn of, like, those groovy bombs and, like, Ratchet and Clank and stuff. Like,
you know,
those little disco balls out. They all start dancing.
The crazy government official sitting behind, like, so when do they turn into super soldiers?
Right.
All right. So when combined with the horrors of disease and famine, both of which were tearing through Strasbourg in 1518, Saint Vitus superstition may have triggered a stress-induced hysteria that took hold of much of the city. So it could have been stress-induced, apparently. Other theories have suggested the dancers were members of a religious cult, or even that they accidentally ingested ergot, a toxic mold that grows on damp rye and produces spasms and hallucinations. So they could have really just been like tripping balls and like,
yeah, like, it was pretty much Woodstock.
Yeah. So, so on the other stuff, because that was like, there was more research that I found, but it basically all said the same thing. And I was like kind of questioning it myself and being like, there's no way, like, especially them bringing dancers, a band, like a stage, like all of that. But it says historical documents, including physician notes, cathedral sermons, local and regional chronicles, and even notes issued by the Strasbourg City Council are clear that the victims dance, and it's not known why. Historical sources agree that there was an outbreak of dancing after a single woman started dancing. A group of mostly young women joined in, and the dancing did not seem to die down. It lasted for such a long time that it attracted the attention of the Strasbourg magistrate and bishop, and some number of doctors ultimately intervened, putting the afflicted in a hospital. So that was the only other thing that I saw that conflicted against it, was that they said that they put people in a hospital. But like, with that many people, how are you just, there's, you can't take a dance party to a hospital.
There's people just wiggling around.
There's people dying here. Don't take this lightly. And there's just a bunch of people dancing around.
Wasn't that in a Tiesto video?
Yeah, they brought that guy back to life.
What if you just like severed off their limbs and then they would stop dancing and they could still live?
Yeah. Right.
True.
That's true.
They'd have the ghost effect or the ghost limb. They'd still be dancing.
They would just head rock. Yeah.
Yeah, they start spinning on their heads.
So it said events similar to this are said to have occurred throughout the medieval age, including the 11th century in Kolbjerg, Saxony, where it was believed.
Can you try that?
Yes. I was hoping you guys were just going to let it slide.
I need to catch that one.
Kolbjerg, Saxony.
All right.
Well, where it was believed to be cause of demonic possession or divine judgment. So they're like, feel the wrath of my punishment. And then they all just started dancing and grooving. And there's this one, which was kind of fun, too. It said at the end, in the 15th century, Apulia, Italy, a woman was bitten by a tarantula, and the venom apparently made her dance convulsively. And the only way to cure the bite was to shimmy and to have the right sort of music available, which was accepted remedy by scholars like Athanasius Kircher. So this dude legitimately was like, let me play this music and shimmy.
So I just want to clarify, when you're saying like they're dancing, are they like articulately dancing, or are they just like having an entire body spasm?
Like it was, yeah. They were in a group dance doing all the same move. No, it was probably the body spasms.
Yeah, I picture them like crump dancing, just like pushing their arms and like waving them as hard as they can.
I was thinking of like the old school Michael Jackson Thriller music video with all the dance going back. It's like that's what's going on right now.
So, maybe they just wanted to describe it as dancing to make it less scary.
Right, because I'm assuming they were just like
the fact they made them a stage. Clearly, maybe they were actually doing pretty well. Dude, so, like, I don't know. Like,
it almost does sound like they were legitimately like dancing as well as they could. You know, I guess.
Like, oh great! I finally learned salsa, but they're now like, I'm going to dance myself to death.
Everybody's dancing
all over.
But Gerald just doesn't know what he's doing. So, yeah. So it's hard to say, but it. Possibly sounds like they were legitimately dancing. So
I don't think it's a terrible way to go.
Yeah. You know, the like exhaustion.
I'd say it's pretty safe to assume they were smiling.
Yeah. You know, for the sake of it, I'd say a lot of them were probably, well, they could have been, you know, like when you're super exhausted and you kind of just have that like squinty, smiley, like look on your face. It could have been that.
And they're definitely on MDMA. So.
And I mean, if they were tripping balls, then some of them were probably definitely smiling.
Touch me. I'll touch you. Let's just rub our bodies together.
Okay. So the next one is Francois Vatel or Vatel. I'm pretty sure it's Vatel.
You sounded so confident at first.
I know. And then I like backtracked and messed myself up. So Francois Vatel is known as the great French chef who killed himself on the morning of the 24th of April, 1671 at Chantilly, France.
His death anniversary is coming up.
And it is. We'll get into it in a couple of seconds, but the French chef thing is kind of a confusion for everybody, apparently. And one of the other things I saw was that he was also a majordomo of Prince Louis II de Bourbon-Condé.
He was a major domo.
And majordomo, I think is how you pronounce it, is a person who speaks, makes arrangements, or takes charge for another. Typically, this is the highest form a person, like a servant, could get for a household, basically. And it's like
they're like the consigliere.
Yeah.
So, whatever that is.
The majordomo may also more informally be someone who oversees the day-to-day like responsibilities of a business enterprise, and historically many institutions and governments, monasteries, cathedrals, and cities, as well as noble or royal houses, also had the post of this title. And they were usually in charge of like the finances. So Francois was born Fritz Karl Wattel in Switzerland, the son of Charles Frederick Wattel, an ordinary worker. So, you know, nothing too special about him. He kind of worked his way up. His birthday is disputed. The dates suggested are like 1625, 1631, or 1635.
The being born part doesn't matter. We're all about the death.
Yeah, we're all about the death part. Yeah. So he actually apprenticed as a pastry cook. When his apprenticeship was finished, he worked for Nicolas Fouquet. Say that one out loud till now. Who was the superintendent of finances in France. And at Fouquet's Chateau Vallée-Vicomte, dude, these are hard, until Louis XIV got jealous of Fouquet's display of opulence and threw him in jail in 1661. So he was just like, nah, dude, you're going to jail. You can't.
I hate when people over display their opulence.
Right? Like, dude, you can't do stuff better than me. Like, go to jail. So, Vattel then went to work at the Chateau of Chantilly for Louis II de Bourbon, Prince de Condé, around 1667. So, a lot of these people had like the Game of Thrones Khaleesi names where they just had like 7,000 titles.
You're throwing around all these big words, and I'm going to take that as disrespect. Yeah, dude,
you're telling me. You know how disrespected I was trying to read these?
It's a bold choice.
So he ended up becoming the manager of the chateau. Like I said, he wasn't really the chef, and it's like a pretty big popular misunderstanding because he's known as like this great French chef, and the dude's not even a chef like anymore. He was just the manager.
He was no Gordon Ramsay.
I think he was apprenticed as a cook and all of that stuff. So he was a chef, but he like wasn't an actual chef for the place anymore. So he was, I don't know. But the Prince de Condé helped Vattel in great esteem. Held Vattel in great esteem, and was given the right to carry a sword, which was an honor in those days. And he was also given his own quarters. So the dude was, you know, he made it pretty big considering that he was just an ordinary worker like his dad was, you know.
He's just walking through the building like, look at my sword, guys. Yeah.
Well, it's an important part to keep that in mind, that he was given the right to carry this sword. So he had his own sword in his own quarters, right? So at the start of April 1671, Louis XIV announced that he would honor the Prince de Condé by visiting him from April 23rd to the 25th. It was a dubious honor to have the king visit as a guest, so it was like real big shit happening. Vattel and the Prince de Condé had only 15 days to prepare for this, so shit was really stressful. Vattel had barely slept for the past 12 nights. As manager of the chateau, he had to feed 600 nobles and several thousand additional people for 3 days, which, that's a lot.
That's nothing. I do that constantly.
Daily basis right here. So, A series of small misarrangements, including fireworks during fog, put Vattel in such a state of stress that when he heard that a fish delivery had possibly gone wrong, he took his own life with his sword. And ironically, shortly afterward, the fish deliveries began pouring in. like pouring in. And somebody went to go and find him, and that's like he went to go find him to tell him that the fish had arrived, and he turned the corner to find him like with his like sword in his gut, like standing there.
He's just running, sir, the fish are
yeah. And it said Madame de Sévigné was a great letter writer of the period. Much information about what happened is drawn from her account, even though she was not there to see it. She heard about it secondhand.
And it said there's little reason to doubt her as she knew everybody who was anybody, and everyone else she mentions in her letters was real. So like apparently anything that chick wrote was real. So this happened.
Everything she said was real. Doesn't matter.
What was our moral? What's the moral of the story for this guy that you guys got?
He shouldn't have been allowed to have his own sword.
take deep breaths, especially when you own a sword.
You need some woosah techniques.
We need more sword control.
More sword control, and don't get mad when you don't have your fish.
Background check.
They should have just gave him like a rubber like fencing sword for like practice or something like that.
I mean, the guy's background was really good before that, Andy.
I bet it was. I missed a lot of it.
All right. So we'll jump into the last guy who this is a good one to end on. His name is Felix Foray. And I did actually look pronunciation up on that one. So come at me.
Yeah, because Felix is a hard name to pronounce.
No, it's the Foray part. It's spelled all Frenchy, all right? Come on.
It's actually just Filai. Filai.
It's Filai.
Little xylophone.
So he was president of France from 1895 until his death in 1899.
Long run.
Foray was Parisian born, and after working as a tanner in his younger years, he became a member of the National Assembly. He became more prominent in French politics up until unexpectedly becoming president. Ooh. During which time France's relations with Russia improved. So
he just kind of like was walking around, just stumbled into the president's office like, whoa, I guess I'm
president. Is this where the beer is? You want to be president?
Hell yeah, I do.
You bet your ass I do. Born in Paris, the son of a small furniture maker, Jean-Marie Foray, and Rode Cussard.
His mom's name was Rode?
Rose.
Oh, I thought you said Rode. I was like, S, what?
Rose Cussard. And yeah, her mom's name was Rode.
you want to say that his dad drove on that road?
Drove all I guess it just goes to road. Show every rose has a road.
I thought you were going to do the thorn thing.
Yeah.
Having started as a tanner and merchant at Le Havre, he acquired considerable wealth and was elected to the National Assembly on August 21st, 1881, and took his seat as a member of the left, interesting himself chiefly in matters concerning economics, railways, and the Navy.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. He was getting
in
wet.
November. Gross. Hey. In November 1882, he became under secretary for the colonies in Ferry's ministry and retained the post till 1885. He held the same post in Terrard's ministry in 1888, and in 1893 was made vice president of the chamber. In 1894, he obtained cabinet rank as ministers of marine in the administration of Charles Dupuy. Dupuy. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't know.
It's Dupuy.
Yeah, boy.
Charles Dupuy.
The following January, he was unexpectedly elected president of the Republic upon the resignation of President Casimir Perier.
Perrier's derriere.
And this is the funny part about it is the principal cause of his elevation was the determination of the various sections of the moderate Republican Party to exclude Henry Brisson, who had a plurality of votes on the first ballot, but had failed to obtain an absolute majority. So to accomplish this end, it was necessary to unite the party, and unity could only be secured by the nomination of someone who offended no one. And, Foray answered perfectly to this description.
You're our most bland, normal guy possible that nobody hates or likes.
So he was like old school Trump.
This big room of people arguing, just this bunch of yelling, and they're like, well, who are we going to pick then? And they all turn and they're like, who the fuck's that guy?
I picture him as like fucking Jerry and Rick and Morty. Like, that's what I'm picturing.
Who are you? I'm Mr. Foray. Does anybody not like this guy? Oh, no, I don't think so.
All I have right, no strong feelings about him either way.
All right, cool. This is our dude. He's our president. So yeah, that's how he unexpectedly became president of France, apparently.
I kind
of
like that.
I know,
did
right?
Did he do well?
No. We're going to move along. So in 1895, he granted amnesty to the anarchist movements, enabling the return from exile in England of several famous anarchists, such as Emily Pouget.
I don't know. Come on home and celebrate our great nation, anarchists.
this is where it gets real good. In 1897, he met Marguerite Steinheil, who subsequently became his mistress. And this scandalous high-profile liaison has been the subject of works of fiction, such as The President's Mistress, aired on Eurochannel with Christiana Reilly in Steinheil's role. You know, I don't know who that is, but that's what that says.
European actors.
Yeah. The very well-known actors.
So if there's any European people out there listening, you guys know who I'm talking about, yeah?
We got your back.
So now this is where it gets really good. You guys ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Foray died suddenly from, I don't know how to say this word, I'm going to try my best, apoplexy, I don't know what it is, but it's what now is commonly known as a stroke. And he suffered this in the LCA Palace on February 16, 1899, while engaged in sexual activities in his office with 30-year-old Margaret Steinheil.
He missed the new fucking century? Oh my God.
It has been widely reported that Felix Faure had his fatal stroke while Steinheil was going down on him. But the exact nature of their sexual intercourse is unknown, and such reports may have stemmed from various puns made up afterward by his political opponents. These were kind of funny, too, especially thinking like back then that these people were saying this stuff. One such pun was to nickname Madame Steinheil as La Pompe Funebre, which is wordplay in French is pompous funebris, which means death care business. And pompe funebre could translate literally as funeral pump.
Oh, man.
It's like, no, you don't want to be pumping that. It's just right to the funeral.
Goddamn, shots fired.
I got to say, man, she must have really knew what she was doing.
Right. And apparently this lady was notorious for doing stuff like this with other famous figures as well.
So she sucked the life out of him?
Yes.
Wait, well, she actually killed others?
No, I don't know about literally that. I meant like the mistress part. She wasn't going around funeral pumping people. Maybe we have to do a death address special on her.
She's probably like putting some type of drug in her mouth, like a little pocket of it. Like,
oh, God.
Just fucking...
Oh. What's that tingly feeling on my penis?
Yeah. Like, oh, wow. My dick feels like corn now.
So George Clemenceau's epitaph of Foray in the same trend was, I don't know how to pronounce that word, volet etre César il ne fut que Pompée.
Whoa.
Which is more wordplay in French, could mean both he wished to be Caesar but ended up as Pompey, or he wished to be Caesar and ended up being blown.
Yeah, she sucked the life out of him. So.
The verb pomper in French is also slang for performing oral sex. So this guy, Clemenceau, who was also editor of the newspaper La Aurore, wrote that upon entering the void, Foray must have felt at home.
He obviously died with a smile.
So
he got that good pomper.
In the death address fashion, this guy definitely had a smile on his face when he died.
But did he though? Or was his mouth just like wide open, like looking at the ceiling, like, oh.
I mean, it was more of an O face than a smile.
Yeah, the smile didn't happen. I don't know if he finished before having said stroke. Or if she realized, like, did you think she realized that he died, or was she just like going to town?
You just gotta keep going. You
how long does the blood retain penis after the heart stops pumping?
Well, Siri, how long?
It takes a while for rigor mortis to set in. So.
Yeah, this is very true.
She probably rode the death boner for a while. That's a good series for you guys to cover. Death boner.
The death boner.
Oh man. So what was the moral of the story for that one for you guys?
The moral is just to go out like that. I mean, there's no other way
to go out with a bang.
Go big or go home.
like,
get that pomper.
Go big or go home. Yeah. You know.
But find you someone that pumps it real good.
Someone give that Pompeii.
Find your funeral pump.
Find your funeral pump.
They call orgasms the little death, but it wasn't little in his case.
It was not little in his case. Yeah, not at all. So, well, I think that was a pretty successful mix of death address little stories that we had going on here.
That's fun.
I think that's probably a good point to end on it and say thanks to everybody that's listening in. And Josh, since you're here with us, if there's any last words or anything that you want to say to the listeners, let them hear it.
I definitely had a lot of fun. You guys are all funny. The stories are hilarious. I surprisingly learned shit here.
That's what you get to learn.
That's some shit. Yeah, and I think like my biggest takeaway is actually going to be funeral pump. Like I'm going to be using that almost everywhere now.
This is common language now.
Not only did I learn historical stuff, I got a new slang word to call people.
My vernacular has expanded.
Yeah, I cannot wait to walk out of this room and be like, hey, funeral pump, how you doing?
How you doing over there?
Like,
awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show and joining us for this episode. And anybody out there listening, like I said, check out the Mindless Morning Show and you can hear more of Josh and the crazy things that they get into over there. So definitely check it out.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good one, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Peace. Don't forget to tip your death guide.
Boom.
It'll say it on its own, asshole.
Thanks for listening to The Death Address. Follow our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for exclusive information on what's to come and to ask us questions. Take a look at our website at www.deathshifter.com. You can find all of the links there as well as some information about the Death Shifter team. If you're interested in supporting the show, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/deathshifter. We'll see you all next time. Till then, take care of yourselves and
don't forget to tip your death guides.
Time to learn, time to laugh. It's the Death Address.